Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Read with Michelle Martin.
If you feel miserable looking at the unread emails in your inbox or anxious monitoring your Slack or your WhatsApp groups and your chat functions at work, you're not alone. The Hive Mind workflow, says author Cal Newport, has become a productivity disaster. And we are miserable, he writes, because we've accidentally deployed a literally inhumane way to communicate. Now, does there need to be clear processes to manage information overload? And what kind of reform or investment will be needed to take us there? Let's find out with a man who is a thought leader at the intersection of technology and personal productivity. He is the New York Times best-selling author and the computer scientist behind the book we're reading today, A World Without Email. Cal Newport, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
It's a terrific book. So take us back to the origins of email. What was email originally designed for, and what's been some of the unintended consequences of its mass adoption?
Well, email really spread rapidly during the first half of the 1990s, and it was solving a really clear problem. It had a cheaper and more powerful alternative to fax machines, to voicemails, and to inter-office memos. So it was taking an existing modes of communication and introducing a better tool for them. That's why it spread so fastly. In its wake, however, it brought with it an unintentional consequence, which is once email was present in many offices, once we could do low-friction digital communication, we changed the way we collaborated towards what I call the hyperactive hive mind workflow, where we started to just work most things out on the fly with unscheduled back-and-forth messaging. And it's the rise of that collaborative style that's actually causing most of the harms we associate with email.
What is it about the circuitry of our brains that make never-ending emails a trigger for anxiousness or unhappiness?
Well, there's really two big things about this mode of collaboration that hurt us. The first is what you were just mentioning there, which is we have a very social brain. Our brains evolved in a context where tribal sociality was critical to our survival. So we take seriously one-on-one interaction with members of our quote-unquote tribe. That old Paleolithic social circuitry, it gets very anxious when it thinks about messages piling up in an inbox, because as far as that old circuitry is concerned, there is people we know who need us and we are ignoring them. And we can tell ourselves, oh, but we're at an office now, we're not in the Paleolithic period and we have norms about response times, but those old circuits don't listen much to reasoning. They just say people need us and we're not answering. So that's one of the two major things, that anxiety of not being able to keep both communications, one of the two major negatives that the hive mind has brought to the modern office.
And so what would you say is the other negative?
Well, the other one, and this is what's really, I think, destabilizing productivity in the whole worldwide economy writ large, is the idea that the human brains are relatively sequential. We're meant to do one thing at a time, and it can take a non-trivial duration to change the focus of our attention from one target to the next. It can take 5 to 15 minutes to really change our cognitive context from one task to another. What we get with the hyperactive hive mind, because there's so many back and forth ad hoc unscheduled communications and conversations going back and forth, is that we have to constantly check inboxes or Slack or Teams or whatever tool you're using. We have to constantly check, because when you have 3 or 4 dozen asynchronous back and forth conversations, you have to be involved, moving messages back when they respond. Otherwise, things grind to a halt. That constant checking, however, directly conflicts with our circuitry. Every time we glance at an inbox or a Slack channel, we initiate one of these expensive context shifts, but then we abort that context shift and move back to the thing we were doing. And then before we can completely shift back to the thing we were doing, we go back and check our email again, and it initiates another one of those shifts. It puts our brain in a permanent state of self-induced reduced cognitive capacity. It literally makes us dumber, and it exhausts us. And that also makes us anxious, because our brain is not meant to switch back and forth so much. So it's really the necessity to constantly tend your inboxes and chat channels, that's a necessity of the hyperactive hive mind workflow, that is really subverting our ability to work productively.
So would you say that the technology of email is changing us at a fundamental level?
Well, it's changing the way we work. And I think that we're used to this now. We figure everything out back and forth on emails. How else would we do it? And because we're used to it, we've just settled into, I guess, this is what work is. But it really does run contrary to the way our brains operate, right? Even if it seems convenient in the moment. It would be like if we ran a car factory and we turned off all the lights because it saved us money on the electric bill, but no one could see what they were doing. And we were putting steering wheels where the tires should go and putting the tires where the steering wheel should go. We would say, who cares that we saved some money on the lights? This is a really bad way to have people get together and build cars. Well, the hyperactive hive mind, let's just figure things out on the fly, convenient or not, is a really ineffective way of taking human brains and saying, how can they work together to produce value?
So is this book, in essence, an extension of your work in 2016, Deep Work, which talked about our ability to focus?
So Deep Work promoted focus as a undervalued skill. This new book, A World Without Email, tries to understand why we've made it so hard to focus and what type of large-scale changes are necessary to get back to a world of work in which focus is possible. So they definitely complement each other. And in fact, I started writing this new book immediately after I finished Deep Work. I put it on pause to write a interstitial book, Digital Minimalism, in 2019, because that was tied to something that was happening very timely, and I think in our culture, and then I returned to it. But really, this is a back-to-back companion piece with Deep Work.
So email, you say, contributes to this hive mind workflow. How has the pandemic impacted this workflow, do you think?
It's made it worse. It's made the hyperactive hive mind even more hyperactive. There was a lot of subtle or undervalued productivity heuristics that we would deploy when we all shared the same physical space, such as grabbing someone after a meeting, seeing if someone's door is open and coming in to ask them a quick question. There's also a heightened social capital cost to asking someone to do something because you would see them. To host a meeting had a bigger social capital cost when you actually have to see people leave their offices, physically come to your room. And so the stakes were higher for doing that. We moved fully virtual temporarily during the pandemic. We got rid of those productivity heuristics and we got rid of those social capital costs. So we began communicating more than we ever had before and passing off assigning and adding new obligations to people's plates and scheduling more meetings than we ever did before. So the hyperactive hive mind, I think for a lot of people, really got out of control during this period of forced remote work.
So we know email has been a paradigm-changing technology for the workforce and blurred the lines between when work ended and or where the office ended. What is the hope and the vision that you're suggesting in your title, A World Without Email?
Right, and it's a fair question. So when I say a world without email, I don't actually mean a world without the tool of email. I don't mean to banish POP3 or SMTP protocols. Again, email was a fantastic productivity improvement in the sense that we didn't have to send faxes anymore. We didn't have to copy memos and put them in everyone's mailbox. We didn't have to plug in those digit codes into our voicemail machine. So it's a great productivity tool for the things it does well. The real vision I have is a world without the hyperactive hive mind workflow. A world in which—
Can we go back? Can we do it? Can we collaborate differently given this is the modus operandi?
Well, not only can we 100% will, because it will make organizations significantly more profitable. And that's the one thing I think is in favor of this issue that we face right now, is that often when we have some sort of force that's making people unhappy in the workplace, there's some sort of dialectic where it's good for these people, but bad for these people. When it comes to the hyperactive hive mind, no one likes it. Employees hate it, right? Bosses, executives, business owners, they hate it too. They're burning out their employees. They're not getting a lot of work out of their employees. No one likes it, right? Replacing the hyperactive hive mind with a more structured workflow is going to make basically everyone happier and the company's way more profitable. The only obstacle is just complexity. It's a pain. It is difficult to actually say, let's talk about how we're going to work, how we're going to collaborate, how we're going to communicate. We're going to have process-specific rules. That whole thing is a pain, and it's just the pain aspect's the only reason why we haven't gone forward. But there's such a back pressure now because there's so much potential profitability. We will 100% move past the hive mind. The question is just how quickly will we do it and whether you'll be ahead or behind on the trend.
I mean, haphazard messaging has come to define task assignment, and it's cheaper that way almost. You know, the boss doesn't have to worry about the micromanagement. It's just put out there and somehow the hive mind figures it out through thousands of emails being passed back and forth. So what kind of accountability is going to be needed? Who is going to need to take the lead for the sort of innovation and processes that need to be put in place for a world without email?
Yeah, well, I mean, first I would even argue that it's cheaper. It's convenient, but it drastically reduces the productivity of the people you hire. So it requires many more salaried employees to get the same amount of work done than in a shop without it. I talked to a computer programming shop for the book, for example, where they're incredibly plugged in. on trying to build their workflows around the way the mind works and to get away from the hive mind. And they said they're 10x more productive than Google because they've focused so much on not having context switching and distracting. They can get the same project done with 1/10 of the engineers that it takes Google. So it's much more expensive to run the hive mind. I think there needs to be a culture shift from the top in an organization, right? Here's terminology. Here's what the hyperactive hive mind is. Here's why it's bad. We want to move away from it. But then the top has to, I believe, empower teams to actually put in place alternatives custom fit to teams. I think teams are the right level. Roughly speaking, a group of people who consistently work together on common work outputs. That's the right level. That you can get a lot of benefits from changing the processes, but you're also flexible and small enough that you can adjust things on the fly and avoid processes that become bureaucratic. So the CEOs need to set the tone at the team levels where we actually make the changes. That's my vision.
So you mentioned workplaces that are actually tailoring workflows according to how the mind works. Can you give us some examples of what they're doing?
There's a bunch of different classes of the different types of approaches to replacing the hive mind. And conceptually, the right way to think about it is you should break up the work that you or your team does into processes, the things you do regularly that produce values. And then for each, explicitly decide, how are we going to communicate, collaborate, move information to accomplish this particular process? Now, what those answers look like depend on the type of process. Sometimes it's just a straightforward application of a tool. One of the biggest pieces of low-hanging fruit in most organizations is meeting scheduling. So sometimes you say, look, we have to schedule meetings with each other and with clients on a regular basis. Shifting to meeting scheduling software like Calendly, like Schedule Once, is a way to set up meetings while reducing unscheduled messaging. Sometimes it's automation. And I don't mean that in a purely digital way, but if there's a process that your team does again and again where the steps are the same every time, the script goes here, the script gets approved, we edit this video, the video goes here, you can actually agree on a set of rules to how to move this thing from step to step without having to send unscheduled messages back and forth. And then sometimes it's about making the information more transparent and the collaboration more structured. So now for a project we're working on, instead of just sending emails or being on a Slack channel, maybe we have a shared virtual task board like Trello or Basecamp or Asana or Flow, where we can see everything going on and who's working on what. And we have highly structured status meetings where we can very quickly check in. What happened to the thing you're working on? What are you working on next? What do you need to get that done? Go, right? So there's all sorts of different classes of what these implementations look like. But at the big picture, what we're trying to do is break work down in the processes, give explicit implementations for each of the processes, aiming to minimize the unscheduled messages that creates all the problems of the hive mind.
What sort of investment is it going to take to streamline communication at the knowledge intense workplace?
The cost is more time than it is actually needing to get more tools or infrastructure, right? So it's difficult to get these processes right, and that takes time. And so I think the biggest investment is being willing to have people take the time to try to experiment and figure out what processes work and enable it. In terms of the tools needed to implement these type of things, the tools are almost the least interesting part of this story. With existing tools, email itself, Slack itself, you could implement your status meetings in Slack, right? The tools are kind of not the interesting part of the story. It's the workflows coming in and saying, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? One of the reasons why we had such a hard time during remote work is that we had no time to think through new workflows for the remote world, because the shift to remoteness during the pandemic threw a lot of unexpected new tasks on people's plates because we had to adjust to the pandemic. So we had a double whammy of we had less time to deal with a collaboration style that got more frenetic, and it became a negative feedback loop.
What do you say to companies and business leaders listening in thinking this is going to take more manpower and it's going to reduce productivity?
Oh, I mean, it's the opposite. It will take significantly less people to get the same amount of work done. The productivity per person is going to skyrocket. The hyperactive hive mind way of collaboration, though convenient in the moment, is one of the worst ways you could think about trying to hook together a bunch of human brains to collaborate. It literally makes people stupider. It literally fatigues their brain much, much earlier, and it makes people really unhappy. The shift to the hive mind is a pain because you have to figure out these processes, but we see this play out again and again in the history of technology intersecting with commerce. I mean, when it comes to car manufacturing, the assembly line was a huge pain to figure out and to implement. It was much more complicated and annoying than the intuitive craft method that most American automakers were using up to that point. Once they went through that pain of implementing the assembly line, though, however, it brought down the man hours required to produce a Ford Model T from just over 12 hours down to 93 minutes. It made Ford the largest company in the world and Henry Ford the richest person in the world. There are huge incentives, in other words, to overcoming things that are inconvenient to get the much better ways of working.
You talk about going through the archives of the New York Times as you trace the ascendance of email across history. What do you think will have to be the watershed moment for this transformation of the way we use email?
I think what we need is a large size company to make these changes and for the rest of the business community to see increased effectiveness, increased employee satisfaction, and increased productivity. We're almost there. There's a lot of interest right now, for example, in American Silicon Valley. And a lot of the big tech companies are really starting to think about this. And they're seeing all this productivity that's on the table. I think that's probably where it's going to happen. I think we're going to see a couple big tech companies make this jump first. And just like how they put open offices onto the map in the 2000s and it seemed to spread everywhere within 4 or 5 years, I think something similar is going to happen once people really get serious about putting an alternative to the hive mind. What we were missing, this is what I'm trying to solve with this book, was vocabulary. This is how we're working. This is its name. This is why it's wrong. If you want to work this way, justify why you think the hive mind is good. Having just a vocabulary around the problem, I think, is really going to open up forward progress.
On your blog, you write about the rules that we can all implement to reduce email. You say it's not just about checking your inbox less. Can you share some of the rules for our business audience and also throw in some high-level principles that perhaps business leaders can think about implementing at their offices?
And the key thing with this hive mind issue is you can't solve it in the inbox. This is not something that is a result or fixable by how you interact with your inbox. Rules about batching, autoresponders, better subject lines, smarter messages. This is not how this problem is solved. You have to go underneath the inbox and say, what are the underlying processes that I am currently implementing with just sending messages back and forth? In other words, what is putting those messages into my inbox in the first place? That's what you want to fix. You can do this as an individual. As an individual, you can just go through and list, here's the 10 or 15 things that I regularly do in my job that produces value for my organization, and start asking one by one, what can I do to change how I implement this process that's going to reduce unscheduled messages? And even just focusing on what you can control on an individual, if you go through process by process and say, how do I reduce unscheduled messages and implementing this process? How do I induce unscheduled messages and reducing that process? You can significantly reduce the number of unscheduled messages arriving in your inbox. And that is the key to this whole game. It's not the total number of messages. It's not the time you spend collaborating. It is how many messages are arriving unscheduled that are going to require a response from you. That is what forces you to check all the time. That's what causes all the cognitive issues.
How confident are you that we are going to move in this direction of some reform in terms of the way we use email?
100% confident. It would be ahistorical if knowledge work in the digital era just stuck with whatever the first way we came up with how to collaborate. It does not match the history of any other intersection of technology and commerce, which shows that you have a relatively slow at first, but constant stream of innovations as we get better and better at working with new technologies in business. It took us a long time to figure out water power in industrial manufacturing. It took us a long time to figure out steam. We had electric motors that we could be using in factories for something like 50 years before we really figured out, if we put electric motors on equipment in the factory, it would be much more effective. We built cars by hand with teams sitting around chassis on sawhorses for 25 years before we figured out there's better ways to do it. So this idea that knowledge works somehow, we just figured it out from the beginning that, this is the best way to do it. You hook everyone up to a single email address associated with their name and just rock and roll with messages. The idea that we just stick with that in the perpetuity would be quite ahistorical. It would be unique, really, in the history of technology and commerce. The arc of productivity bends towards more and more effective ways of collaborating. We're just getting started thinking about that in knowledge work. So there's no way that the way we work right now is going to be the way we work in the proverbial tomorrow.
That's a relief. You mentioned that you were thinking and writing parts of this book while you wrote Deep Work. And I'm wondering, as you explored this book, did ideas for further books come to mind?
I'm not sure what the next big topic is when it comes to the intersection of work and technology. One topic that came out of this book, I would say, that I touched on briefly in one of the principles, but I would love to elaborate more on potentially, is just the notion of busyness in general, or more, let's say this a little bit more abstractly, the way we've recalibrated what's an appropriate amount of work to be on someone's plate. I think that has drifted to a level that is way too broad. In other words, for reasons that we non-intentional, just a drift as we interact with technology, now the average knowledge worker could have hundreds of different obligations on their plate, which is not a very effective way to actually make use of brains. Increased specialization almost certainly is better. People should be working on less, but doing those things better. And so I'm very interested in that trend of busyness creep. And I think it's actually holding back business growth and making people miserable. And no one ever really thought it was a good idea that people need 30-page long task list, right? That's not a great deployment of cognitive resources. How do we get there? How do we move back? That's one idea that I think is really ripe for exploring right now.
The book we're reading today is A World Without Email by Cal Newport. Cal, thanks for joining us.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.